You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week, as you know, is Fuck Off Fascism Week, and today we are taking a look at the relationship between fascism, propaganda, and the media. Of course, fascism and propaganda has a long history going back to Nazi Germany and has continued right up to today with the alt-right and the use of social media and memes such as Pepe the Frog. But how does fascist propaganda work, and has the mainstream media today contributed to the rise of the alt-right movement and so-called fascist political parties? Well, earlier I spoke to Auckland University media and communications lecturer Gavin Ellis about fascist propaganda and the wider relationship between the alt-right and the media.
And yeah, the president sucks.
Fuck!
And she's a war pig. Fuck.
Oh!
Shit is out of luck.
Fascism!
It's the song I hate. It's the song I hate.
How important is propaganda to fascists, and how good are they at using propaganda?
It's very important. After violence and edict, which are their principal weapons of control, propaganda is an exceptionally important way of controlling the populace, either through patriotic fervour or fear. And it's has always been widely used for those purposes, and they're not all brilliant at it, but for various reasons they all have the tool at their disposal. The Nazis, of course, were past masters at the use of propaganda. So it varies, but by and large they all use it. I mean, in North Korea at the moment, uses propaganda throughout the lives of its inhabitants. We in the West would regard much of it as ham-fisted and rather silly, but it works there. So how good are they at using it? That's a difficult thing to say, but how effective? Most of them are very effective because of the other means of control that they have.
What sort of themes does it portray?
Well, first and foremost, the legitimacy of the regime that controls the population. The propaganda is there first and foremost to reinforce and give a form of legitimacy, usually a misplaced form of legitimacy, to the regime itself. So that's one side of it. When the regime finds itself in conflict with others, whether that be internal conflict by partisan groups or going to war with other nations, then it takes on an additional purpose of keeping people on a war front, either through patriotic fervour or warning them of the dire consequences of loss, of losing, of not being victorious, and so on. So it serves a range of purposes. I mean, some of the purposes are much more mundane. For example, it can be used and is used in those regimes for just keeping the place tidy.
Mm.
As simple as that. In communist China, there was a propaganda campaign to rid China of flies. So it's not all high-level stuff. Some of it is quite low-level.
Now, you mentioned Nazi Germany and how they were the masters at it. Of course, Goebbels is considered one of the forerunners of propaganda. How influential were his methods?
Oh, I think that his methods not only were influential, but continue to be influential. After the war, his diaries were analysed and a series of principles were extracted from them that Goebbels had followed in pursuing propaganda before and during the Second World War. And many of those principles, once you strip away the Nazi connotations, you can see that they're still in use today. Promoting a leader with prestige, for example, is a common one that's used not just by authoritarian regimes, but by democratic governments trying to promote their prime minister, president, or whatever. many of the principles that he employed, and they were insightful, and without giving the man imbuing him with any qualities that are commendable, because he was a monster, but nonetheless he was a man who understood extremely well how the human mind works and how human emotions work, and it was playing on those emotions that that gave rise to his principles of how to carry out propaganda.
What about ultra-right-wing groups these days? How effective are they at using the media to help shape public opinion in ways that suit their ideologies?
Well, first and foremost, I think they use social media much more effectively than mainstream media, at least in getting themselves established, because they can use the bubbles of social media to speak to like-minded people and to increase the number of like-minded people that that are out there and who subscribe to their viewpoints. It's only really when those groups start to engage in formal political processes, elections and so on, that they really have a requirement to go to the mainstream media. And they're effective in some regimes more than they are effective in others. They're very effective where they have mainstream media who are either like-minded or are receptive to their points of view. Now, in Europe, for example, in Western Europe, media systems tend to involve outlets that have fairly obvious political leanings to the left, or the, more particularly to the right. In France, for example, and certainly in Italy, that's the case. Less so in Northern Europe, but certainly in the sort of Mediterranean part of Europe, very, very strong political affiliations in their media. And the ultra-right wing can find a place in mainstream media there. In America, of course, where we saw the rise of Fox News and that right-wing focus, then the more right-wing groups have an outlet there. And of course there are other publications in the United States that tend to be extreme right-wing. So there are ways and means, but their principle and initial force nowadays lies in the use of social media.
What do you make of this idea that they tend to use free speech as an argument to justify some of their activity and kind of putting their ideas out there?
Well, they do. They do. And to a degree, they have every right to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of free speech. But free speech is not open-ended. There are limits to free speech. We have laws, for example, governing hate speech, and society sees that there are responsibilities associated with the use of that right to free expression, and places limits on how far you can go. Now, of course, the extreme right, and particularly racially based extreme right-wing groups, run up against hate speech laws, and so they should. But they are adept at the use of their right to free expression, which is ironic, of course, because once an ultra-right-wing group, go back to the Nazis, for example, gets into power, the first thing they do is remove the right to free speech.
Just one final question then. With the rise of alt-right groups or far-right political parties, I guess, and even people like Donald Trump, how much responsibility do you think the media have for this in terms of giving such groups a platform?
Well, the issue of free speech is there as well. I mean, you cannot simply close down these people because you don't like them. But you can, the media can and has every right and a responsibility to subject everything they say to close scrutiny, both in terms of truth and in terms of implication. And there is a real responsibility to do that. There is also a responsibility on the part of the media to ensure that there are alternative, contradictory viewpoints given equal prominence or to what's being said. They also have a responsibility, of course, to stay within the limits of the law, to allow alt-right groups, for example, to spout racist cant is something that the media should not do, and there are limits to what they should say they are prepared to publish. But their greatest force, I think, lies in exposing groups like that to sunlight.
Yeah. Fuck off, fascism.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.